This is Fresh Air. I'm Terry Gross. One of South Africa's most popular TV interviewers is a man who dresses in drag and appears in the persona as an Afrikaner matron named Evita. Evita's interviewees are the political leaders of the new South Africa. Even Nelson Mandela has been interviewed by Evita. Sounds improbable, doesn't it? But Evita, in between her sometimes dishy asides, manages to evoke genuinely interesting, often moving stories from her guests about their years in exile or in prison, and their hopes for the new South Africa. She's been helping to sell the idea of democracy to resistant Afrikaners. The character of Evita is the creation of South African satirist Peter Dirkhuis. He spent much of the 70s, 80s, and early 90s satirizing the apartheid regime. The government returned the favor by often censoring his work. But his alter ego Evita is popular now in the new National Assembly. In fact, a bust of Evita was recently placed on display in Parliament. Last June, I asked Peter Dirkhuis to describe Evita.
Evita, firstly, is 10 years older than me. She's 60 this year, and I'm only 50, which is always nice to know. She's got brown hair. She sometimes feels taller than I am. She sometimes feels thinner than I am, and she's got better legs than I have. But she's very inspired by a great love in my life, who is Sophia Loren. And it's not that she's like Sophia Loren, but Sophia Loren's body language and that extraordinary, eternal confidence that Sophia has physically is something I watch all the time. So Evita has got that inner strength physically, so she's quite imposing. She's got quite a lot of makeup on. She's quite well made up. She's, I suppose, a cross between Imelda Marcos. Who's that lady who ran the hotels? The Helmsley lady?
Leona Helmsley. Yeah.
Yeah. Margaret Thatcher and Minnie Mouse. I suppose she's a combination of all the strong women that have sort of been around the world, except that Evita is very much her own person. And socially, she was born an Afrikaans girl in the Orange Free State, which is one of the provinces of South Africa. Very much a Calvinist background, very similar to mine. She became the wife of a politician, meaning that she probably was stronger than he was, and eventually overpowered him in her public image. And in fact, in the old South Africa, every time I played her and every time she said, "I've just spoken to P.W. Botha," the world believed that she had. And the point of my new show with her is that she now says, "I've just spoken to Nelson Mandela," and now they believe that she has too.
What is Evita doing interviewing Nelson Mandela and other luminaries of the new South Africa?
Well, in the old South Africa, she was created in 1978 in a newspaper column I was writing. And because of censorship and because of fear, people were not writing about the things that I thought were, firstly, very absurd, and secondly, very important to hear about. So I created this wife of a nationalist member of parliament who, in the column once a month, would tell the truth, and nobody stopped us. And then I started doing my one-man show, and she became a flesh-and-blood character with a big pink hat and gloves and handbag and all that. And, of course, when Nelson Mandela became my president, I mean, as far as I was concerned, I was irrelevant. I was redundant. I would now become a gardener and work quietly in the garden and stop all this nonsense. But it seems that the new government is writing as much material for me as the old one did. But in order to make Evita pertinent, I had to take her out of opposition, where she's useless, and get her into bed with the new government. And so this new TV series called Evita's Funny Galore had her speaking to 12 of the top new politicians in South Africa. And it was the most extraordinary, surreal experience of my life because, as you can imagine, interviewing Nelson Mandela while wearing a dress and being treated like Margaret Thatcher was something that is difficult to explain.
Now, is this a non-threatening way for Afrikaners to relate to democracy through this character of Evita? They can identify with her, and she's preaching democracy. She's preaching the new South Africa.
They can, but they're also aware that she's preaching it through the hypocrisy of the new South Africa. I mean, Evita, like so many white South Africans, is the first person to say that she'd never supported apartheid. Everybody in South Africa was now part of the struggle, which is part of the political Alzheimer's disease that every country in trauma seems to suffer when they come out of it, like Germany in 45. And I mean, I still have to come to the US and find anybody who voted for Ronald Reagan twice, you know. So I think it's a universal problem. But it's not just Afrikaners. I think many other South Africans who are not Afrikaans and white, who are Afrikaans and black, also identify with Evita and take her as a sort of a talisman in their lives.
Do you think that Evita can ask questions that regular journalists wouldn't ask? For instance, to Nelson Mandela, she said, "You've freed all of us, you've freed me of guilt."
Yes, well, the Nelson interview was a very dicey one because Evita's a very bitchy creature, and I made her very one-dimensional. I did not in any way want to embarrass him. I did not want to confuse him with this campery of a man dressed as a woman. I didn't want to trip him up. I mean, I love the man, and the man is too important, a politician, and too precious a human being to trivialize. So Evita behaved herself very much. But there are definitely things that she can say that I can't say.
Like
that
what?
There are first attitudes that she has that I don't have. She still defends the National Party. She still pretends that apartheid was imported from the United Kingdom and that the Afrikaners gave it the name, but it's that it's a British thing. She's a devil's advocate. And also, because she doesn't exist, means that everybody else can have a ball knowing that they don't exist in that moment in time. So I give people rope and they hang themselves with a smile.
Evita seems to have close personal connections to many of the government leaders she interviews. What are some of the connections you've created for her?
In the past, she had some very specific fax connections with Minister of Foreign Affairs Puk Buerta, and with the Minister of Police, and with various other cabinet ministers, whom I personally have never met. But eventually, the letters that she wrote to them were answered to her. And the only minister from that stable that I still play with is Minister Puk Buerta, who is now a recycled nationalist in the government of Mandela. And in the legend of Evita, she's had an affair with him for 27 years. And the irony is that he now believes it. So in my interview with Puk Buerta, he hugged Evita like hugging an old mistress. He called her my darling, my sweetheart. I mean, I call him Mr. Minister and he calls me Peter, you know, like some school teacher. But Evita calls him sweetheart and he calls her darling. And I tell you, yes, I think some psychiatrists could write thick books about this relationship.
Peter Dirk Ace is my guest. He's a South African satirist. And he hosts a very popular TV show in South Africa in which he dresses in drag as an upper-class Afrikaner matron named Evita. And in that persona, he interviews Nelson Mandela and other leaders of the new South Africa. I understand Nelson Mandela once invited Evita to an election rally. Did Evita go? And what was it like?
Well, that was my first step into the new arena. I was asked to come and entertain 40,000 black, mainly black kids and young people from the townships at a rally that Nelson was giving in the Cape. And I took Evita wearing her traditional Afrikaner outfit. It was like doing Fiddle on the Roof in Nuremberg. It was the most extraordinary experience, I'll tell you. I was very nervous because I really didn't know if these people knew what I was doing, because I was very much a white icon through a white media of television and theater, which was not something that all black people were interested in. And yet, the moment Evita arrived on stage, she was cheered like you would cheer somebody at a basketball game. So I did my 15 minutes, and basically my message to the people was the vote is secret. No matter who you vote for, nobody will know, because the big fear was that people would be punished for whoever they voted for. And then Nelson arrived, and I was asked to remain there as Evita. I wanted to go to the loo. I needed to go and have a wee. I mean, I'd been dressed as a girl for long enough. I needed to do something boyish. But they said, no, sit. Nelson wants to meet you. So eventually I ended up sitting next to Nelson, gazing at him like Nancy Reagan. And it was wonderful. And every time he looked at Evita, he roared with laughter. And if there's any contribution I can make to the health and the happiness of Nelson Mandela is to allow him to laugh as much as he likes at Evita. If that's all I'm there for, then I've done my job.
Well, would you do Evita's voice for us to give our listeners a sense of the character?
Well, thank you. I'm so glad you have a chance to talk to the Americans who have done so much to inspire us in the past. You know, I came to America in the 50s with my husband. We were sent to America by Dr. Verwoerd to study your Indian reservation system on which we based our homeland's policy. So I have a very soft spot for you Americans. So there she is.
At the end of the show, Evita sometimes blows kisses to the audiences.
Oh, absolutely. She blows kisses to Nelson Mandela in her cell phone. She speaks to him all the time and tells him to put in his eyedrops. She says, now remember, Madiba, it's 2 eyedrops every 4 hours, not 4 every 2. Otherwise, your eyes go blue. We don't want a black president with blue eyes.
My guest is South African satirist Peter Dirk Ace, who hosts a South African talk show in persona as Evita. We'll be right back. This is Fresh Air. Peter Dirk Ace is my guest. He's a South African satirist who dresses in drag as an upper-class Afrikaner matron named Evita, and in that persona he interviews Nelson Mandela and other leaders of the new South Africa. Tell us how you first created Evita. She goes back a long time.
Yeah, she goes back to the late 70s when things were getting darker and darker. P.W. Botha had just taken over as prime minister. And I couldn't get a job because I'd had all my plays banned by the censor board. So somebody gave me a job as a columnist in a Sunday newspaper. And through this column, I created the wife of a nationalist member of parliament who could then tell things that were really happening that nobody would write about. So that's what she started as a means to an end. And then when I started my one-man show, political show in 1981, she was a character in the chorus line. And because dressing up as a woman, as an Afrikaner, is very controversial in South Africa, she attracted a lot of attention. And soon I built up a whole family history for her. She has a husband, she has children, whom I play as well. She has twin sons. One's very butch and very Nazi. His name is Izan, which is Nazi spelled backward. And her other son is very gay and very, very, very sweet and sensitive. And her daughter's name is Billie Jean, very blonde, very Sharon Stone. And she married now in the new South Africa. She's married to a black man and she's got black children. So Evita Besaidnet has got black grandchildren, which serves her right.
Well, did the censors in South Africa during apartheid see your sexual anarchy, the gender bending, as particularly threatening?
No, I don't think so. I think they saw it as extremely irritating. They called me terribly, terribly potent names like homosexual, like communist, like anti-Afrikaans, like anti-South African. Wonderful words that actually really mean nothing other than just to enrich one's resolve. So it really wasn't. Listen again. Let me just underline the fact that I was not in any way in as much danger as most of the South Africans who were tortured to death, who were shot, who were imprisoned, who were banned. You know, I think my high heel shoes and my stuffed bra and my red lips helped me survive.
And when the censors called you homosexual, what kind of weight did that have? Is that a terrible thing to be called by censors?
Well, for many years, it was a terrible thing until we got our new constitution, which now protects gay rights. It's the only one in the world that does. But in the past, it was illegal. It was against the law to be homosexual and to even admit to things like that. Many times when I was confronted with the accusation of, was I homosexual? I would say, yes, I am homosexual on Tuesdays and Thursdays. On Mondays and Wednesdays, I'm heterosexual. On Friday, I'm bisexual. And on Saturdays, I use my imagination like Hugh Grant.
And now, I've read that in one of your plays, during the era when a lot of your work was being censored, you made up an obscenity, a fake word.
Yes.
That you used as an obscenity. What? And then you called, I think, the censorship board and invited them out to watch your play.
Well, that happened because one of the great things that happened to me is I had a great father, great sense of humor, a very, very strict Calvinist conservative man, but a man with a great sense of humor. And I got him onto the censor board right in the middle of all my trouble with the censor board. My pa became a censor. Because he could see movies free. He loved the idea of seeing movies uncut and free. And he's the one who said, these people are such idiots. Learn the law. Learn the law and trap them with their own law. So the law says, and still does strangely, even now, they haven't bothered to get around to getting rid of that law yet, that if they have one complaint, they must come and ban. So I used to complain. I used to send them 3 or 4 different letters with different letterheads and different pens complaining about my work. So they would come and ban my work, and I would reproduce the letters and say I was responsible for my own censorship, and then that would get great publicity. So sadly, I frightened them away. But then in one play, instead of using really rude words, I made up Afrikaans words to sound rude, and they banned that play. And then in the little court case we had to try and get the play back, we exposed them for not actually knowing their swear words. And the publicity was more than money could buy. And that made the people laugh at the fear of censorship. And that was also very positively undermining of the system.
What are the words that you made up, the fake Afrikaner swear words?
Well, there's a word that sounds like this, genotskrots. Doesn't it sound rude? Genotskrots. I mean, it sounds like something like a crotch that gives joy, which, of course, it doesn't mean a thing, but it's genotskrots. It was wonderful. And they had to look it up in their dictionary, and they couldn't find it, and they were very embarrassed.
So this was like a little performance piece you created, in a way.
Yes. I mean, you know, everything was part of the whole. Everything meant that no matter, even if you were... If you knew you were breaking the law, you had to make them aware of the fact that you knew that you were breaking the law. In some of my shows, I would have a pre-printed postcard addressed to the Minister of the Interior, in which the postcard said, "I hereby find this show obscene, blasphemous, blah, 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 delete whichever word is not applicable." And they would just post these in their thousands to the minister and just clog his postal passages and cause unnecessary chaos and hopefully put up the blood pressure and made people laugh at their bosses. Laughter is a great weapon. You know, people find it very hard to fight it.
So I guess the trick for you is every time one of your plays was banned, you had to come up with another play.
Well, you see, the reason I did these one-man shows was because I was in charge of the material. There was no script because they could ban it from the script. That's what the law said. If there's no script, they had nothing to work from. I could also change it every night. I changed the title. If they came and banned the title, I'd have another title. And also, I'd have three or four cardboard boxes on stage with all my props in and all my characters, not going off stage to change, changing in front of the audience, which gave it a very unique theatricality. And when the show was over, I threw my boxes in the back of the little car and raced off before the audience could catch me.
Has your family always been behind you as a satirist?
My family was very closely related to the first Afrikaner apartheid prime minister. My family is very Afrikaans rooted from my father's side, and a great family. I love them. They're very fine people. And the way that we have as a family adapted to the alphabet of democracy is a remarkable example of how South Africa has done it. Because my family was very conservative. But my mother was Jewish. My mother was from Berlin. She'd been thrown out by the Nazis, and she brought with her this great humor, this great compassion, this great anger, and this great survival that the Jewish nation has had for millions of years, as far as I'm concerned. So I'm very proud to be a Jewish Afrikaner. I belong to both chosen people.
Have you done satires of Winnie Mandela?
Yes, I do Winnie. She's my superstar. I mean, Winnie is really very important in my show. I've done her for some years. In fact, I even did her in an airport lounge when she sat next to me and she said, "Darling, do that sketch you do about me." And let me tell you, it was very hard, except she laughed. I'd never understood why she laughed, but she thought it was funny. Yes, I do Winnie. I do Winnie.
What are some of the things you have to say about her?
Well, Winnie's the one who gave me the title for the new show. At one stage, she says, she's got this fantastic Afro outfit on, and she says, "Do you like my new outfit? I got it in New York when I was there raising money for the IDP. The shop gave it to me free after I took it. Oh, come now, darling, fair is fair. We watched whites bankrupt our country. Now it's going to be our turn. Baby, you ANC nothing yet." So she's a very sexy, dangerous lady to play with. And she's a major South African politician. So absolutely, she's very much in my show.
You know, you mentioned Desmond Tutu. I understand you do a very good caricature of him.
Thank you, yes. Yes, you know, I said to Peter Dirk, I said, "Why am I not in your show?" And so he did me in a show, and I went to look at him, and, you know, I said, "You know, it's very good. You're very naughty, but you don't wear enough rings on your fingers."
Did he really say that to you?
He said that to me, and he gave me some more rings, and I've got at least 12 rings on my 10 fingers. I love him. I love him. He's a great man.
Evita sounds like she's a real big hit with the new government and with many people in South Africa today, but are there people who are really angry at the character and who really hate the work that you're doing now?
Yes, yes, I'm delighted to tell you that they are, and that's wonderful. That's democracy, the right to disagree. I always find that such a vehement reaction against such a flimsy character tells me more about the people than the character. I mean, I've had critics, you know, say to me, "Stop this nonsense, you know, do something serious." And then I find out that they dress up as Evita when they're at home.
Peter Dirkhuis is a South African satirist. He's currently touring his one-man show, You Ain't Seen Nothing Yet. Our interview was recorded last June. I'm Terry Gross, and this is Fresh Air.